And now to the analysis of Brooks and Capehart. That is New York Times columnist David Brooks and Jonathan Capehart, columnist for The Washington Post. As always, it is so good to see both of you.
Great to see you too, Judy.
Thank you for being here. But what we are going to talk about first is the mess. We were just describing it, Jonathan, on Capitol Hill. They've gone day after day. They can't come to an agreement. The Democrats can't come to an agreement on the president's priorities. He himself was there today. Why is this so hard to get done?
I think it's so hard to get done, Judy, because Democrats understand that even though the presidential term is 4 years, the way the presidency is these days, it's really just 1 year. Nothing is going to get done in Washington on Capitol Hill come 2022 because of the 2022 midterms. And the fact that the House majority, Democratic House majority, hangs in the balance in 2022, maybe even also the Senate majority hangs in the balance. And so what's happening is Democrats are trying to cram in every policy priority that they have into that reconciliation bill. And right now, no one seems to want to give up their pet project. But we're getting down to the wire here where folks are going to have to decide, what's your number one priority? You can't have everything. What's your number one priority, and how can we get to yes? And you call it a mess, and it is a mess, but I think we're so unused to legislating that this is what's happening. Usually it's between Democrats and Republicans. It's kind of hilarious that it's Democrats negotiating with Democrats, but that's what's happening here.
Hilarious, but David, for the speaker and for the president and others, it's, you know, they want to get this done and it's not happening.
Yeah, well, that yesterday was definitely a setback for Nancy Pelosi. How many times in her years as leader have we seen her not in control of her caucus? That's rarely happened. And she was not in control and didn't have the votes she thought she had yesterday. But I have a feeling they're coagulating their way toward a solution. It may take weeks, but I think they will get there. And the difference between $1.5 trillion and $3.5 is a big difference. And that's why it's so hard. And I think one thing that may clarify is that they figure out, what is this for? As Jonathan said, right now this is for everything. There's a whole Democratic agenda thrown into one thing. But they're not going to get everything. They're going to come down, as Lisa said, and I've been hearing, to $2.5 trillion. So how do we do that? And I would say, what is this for? To me, this is for, over the last 50 years, folks without a college education in some of the poorer parts of the country have been left behind. And there are a lot of things in this measure that would redistribute money from folks with a college degree who are doing well toward folks without a college degree who need some help, both in the child subsidies, the jobs. And that would be a major accomplishment if we could rewrite some of the bad distribution that's been happening over the last 50 years, and if we could show that we respect the dignity of those people who, you know, have been left behind. And if you can have a $2.5 trillion bill that shows respect for those who's left behind, that's an amazing legacy for any party or president.
And it is, both of you are saying, Jonathan, that the progressives are very clear that this is what they want. And I hesitate to put a label on everybody else, but the moderate, more moderate Democrats are saying, wait a minute, it's too much money. What's at the heart of this division among Democrats?
Well, I mean, I think what's at the heart is they all want to get this done. If you talk to them, do you support the bipartisan infrastructure plan? They all do. Do you want some of the things that are in the reconciliation bill? They all want things that are in the reconciliation bill. Right now, everyone has to focus on the content instead of the price tag. I disagree with David in that this has, you know, been a setback for Nancy Pelosi, simply because the talks are ongoing. If the talks had broken down and everyone had left Washington, that would be one thing. But the president went to the Hill. He talked to the conference. From some of the reports I've heard, he made it very clear to them what he wants them to do. I think that they will come to some sort of agreement that makes it possible to vote on the bipartisan plan while still punting down the road the work on the reconciliation bill. It has to happen because the Democrats need it, but also it's the president's agenda. The progressives have been very smart in saying that this isn't us arguing with each other. This is the president's plan. We're not the radicals here. This is the president's plan. And at the end of the day, I think that's what's going to carry the day for this.
And David, I mean, the two of the figures we've been talking about throughout this process are Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. I looked up today, the population of those two states together is 9 million people out of a country of 330 million. How do they have as much clout as they do?
Well, it's a 50-50 Senate, and I think there are a bunch more, John Tester. There are other moderates who are sort of hiding.
True.
Behind their coattails. But, you know, they represent, Joe Biden was elected as the most moderate member of the Democratic primary field. So there are moderates in the Democratic Party who probably worry about the spending. I think Joe Manchin, some of the things I'm not crazy about, but when he says we should means test, we should not be subsidizing upper middle class people with whatever pre-K education, but we should be focusing our money on those who are most in need. That's not a stupid argument. I think a lot of means testing is one way they could bring the cost of this down. There's going to have to be decisions made. If they have to bring it down by, say, $1 trillion, are we going to do Medicare expansion in this? Are we going to do climate change? And reading what the progressives seem mad about right now, it seems like some of the climate change stuff may be on the chopping block. The worst thing they could do is keep every little piece of the bill, but just make it cheaper. And that would ensure that they did everything badly. And so they've really got to make some priorities. And if it comes to shove, then Joe Biden's got to say, okay, here's the compromise that I support. You're either, you know, you're going to support your president or you're not. And I think they will get to that. When I hear the Democrats talking, I do not hear them erecting walls. I hear them getting to yes, but in a way where they get the most.
Do you agree the worst thing they could do would be to just cut everything a little bit to get to a lower number?
Well, it depends on how you're defining cut. One of the options I've heard is, you know, this is a 10-year plan. This is not a one-year plan. It's a 10-year plan. So if you have the child tax credit, say, or a free community college over 10 years, well, what if you scale it back to 5 years? How much does that bring down the cost of this infrastructure plan? Congresswoman Susan Del Bene, I think she's the chair of the New Democrats, she's all about, let's do a few things well. And then be able to say, show the American people that we've got this done. So if you shrink the number of years that a program carries over, then that brings down the cost. If you focus on a few things and do them well, that would bring down the cost. But they've got to do something to get everyone to yes.
There's a little smoke and mirrors in that. When we'd have these cliffs where, oh, it's going to be only a child tax credit for 3 years. Well, we all know it's going to be permanent. You're just not counting the money you actually are spending. So there's a little chicanery, I would say, in some of these cliffs that they built into this.
A little chicanery, just a little. But just from the both of you, how much President Biden has riding on this? I mean, he has to get this done. Is
yes.
that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. As the progressives have been arguing correctly, this is the president's agenda. It's called the Build Back Better Act. That's his whole campaign slogan. And he ran on everything that is in that bill. And if a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate cannot pass, get the Democratic president's agenda passed, then what's their argument in 2022 to be left in the majority, and what's his argument in 2024 to be reelected? That's why this is so important.
Yeah, and the weakness for Biden right now in this poll slide is competence. Can he do stuff? And if he can't be competent, then the whole reason for his election. So he'd be in real trouble if that happened.
So we're talking about 2022, 2024, but there is an election. There are two elections happening this year for governors. One of them, New Jersey, we think we know what's going to happen there. But in the state of Virginia, Jonathan, you have the former governor, right. Democrat Terry McAuliffe, facing off against a Republican, Glenn Youngkin, who worked in private equity, I think, for 25 years. This race is closer than the Democrats have seen in a while. Mm-hmm. Democrats are nervous. And we've got just a clip of a debate in the last few days between Mr. Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe. Let's listen.
There's an over and under tonight on how many times you're going to say Donald Trump. And it was 10, and you just busted through it. You're running against Glenn Youngkin. Who knows who's going to be running for president in 2024? And
maybe he's
candor?
A nominee. Will you support
Who knows? Let me just start. If he's the Republican nominee, I'll support him.
Here's my message to Congress. I am really sick and tired of all of them. You know what? They ought to follow the Virginia model. We got things done. That's why so many Republicans have endorsed me. We do things in a bipartisan way. They got to stop their little shitty chat up there.
So what you get a taste of the debate from that, Jonathan, is Terry McAuliffe talking about, you know, we need more bipartisanship. But with Glenn Youngkin, who has been endorsed by President Trump and has said he would vote for him if Trump were the nominee. How do you see this contest?
Well, look, when Terry McAuliffe won the Democratic primary, I saw someone very close to him, and I asked, I just said, no, congratulations at the crowded field. You won the primary. And so now what's it looking like in the general? And the person said to me, that was the easy part. Glenn Youngkin is someone who's not going to be easy. So what we have in Terry McAuliffe is someone who always runs as if he's 50 points behind. But the fact that Terry McAuliffe came out of the gate understanding the challenge that Glenn Youngkin poses, I think puts him in the right mindset to tackle him. The thing about Glenn, the thing about in that clip that we you just showed of Glenn Youngkin saying, you know, you can say Donald Trump all the time. Donald Trump is a motivator for the Democratic base. And that's exactly what Terry McAuliffe is going to need if he is going to turn these slim poll majorities that he has within the margin of error, and some of them, into electoral victory.
What does this look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, Virginia has swung pretty blue. The fact that this is close, I don't think it's Terry McAuliffe's fault. I think it's just there are headwinds for Democrats because of President Biden's approval rating, because of COVID. What's striking me about the race is the strongest argument that McAuliffe can make against Youngkin is, you're a Republican. And Youngkin is saying, well, I'm kind of a Republican. I'm sort of a never-Trumper, but I'm also a forever Trumper. I'm kind of a Republican, but not really. And Youngkin's strongest argument against McAuliffe is, you're a Democrat. And he's like, well, I'm not like those Washington Democrats. So the parties are unpopular. And so the candidates, especially for governor, are saying, well, I'm kind of in the party, but I'm kind of not in the party. I'm more tied to Virginia than I am to a party. And they're both doing this dance. I think both of them are doing it pretty effectively. You still have to think it's a Democratic state. If McAuliffe loses, I would think that would be a sign of national headwinds for Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, the question, one of the questions about this race, as both of you are saying, Jonathan, is how much of a factor is President Trump on the ticket a year after this governor's race, they'll vote in early November. How much of a factor is Donald Trump?
Well, like he's a factor because for Democrats, he's a motivator. People are still angry at him for what he did to the country during his administration, but also Youngkin's answer about, well, if he's the nominee, I'll vote for him. Well, if Donald Trump isn't the nominee, that Republican is going to be a MAGA-esque person. And so for Democrats, that's, you know, okay, so it's not Trump. Well, we have to still worry about Republicans. And so that's why I think Donald Trump is a major factor in this. And to your point about, you know, they don't want to be part of the parties, one of the reasons why Terry McAuliffe is saying, you know, Washington, get your act together, you know, pass this bill. Yeah, he's running away from them now, but if they end up passing the bipartisan bill, he's going to be a very proud Democrat.
Yeah, the man did run the Democratic Party for a while.
But I mean, every Republican running from now until, certainly till 2022 and then 2024, as long as Donald Trump is around, is going to be asked, you know, what's your connection?
Right, and it's going to be problematic, but I think his success so far, moderate success in the polls at least, is that you can do it. You can say, I'm for Virginia. This is not national politics. I'm for Virginia. But who knows what Donald Trump is about to do? He might say, if you're not 100% with me, I'm going to come out against you. And that would be really poisonous for any Republican office holder. So a lot of it is, how does Donald Trump want Republicans to win state races? Not clear that he does.
And he's chastised, I guess, Youngkin and other Republicans who haven't been sufficiently embracing.
Yeah, he was in Georgia, and he said nice things about Stacey Abrams because Brian Kemp did something he didn't like.
All right. We are going to leave it there. David Brooks, Jonathan Capehart, thank you both.
Thanks, Drew.